Well, welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm your host. You are listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that's designed to pull back the curtain on the industry and expose the truth about money and investing. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I hope you're having a super day. It is a beautiful day in Pennsylvania, considering it's winter time. And I am excited to share a little bit of good old horse sense, good old common sense. You know, I remember my dad used to say all the time, common sense isn't all that common. But, you know, I want to go on a little bit of a rant today. And the purpose of my rants is just to maybe give you a different perspective at the way things are. You know, it's often interesting. You can take anyone in their chosen vocation, chat with them a little bit, and you can generally find some insight that's counter to what you thought the way their industry might have worked. So that's often what we do here. You know, we believe in education because education leads to clarity, and clarity can lead to confidence, and confidence is the only thing that's going to help us gain peace of mind over our investments. You know, there's not a lack of information in this country. There is a lack of clarity, though. But what am I going to rant on about today? Well, you know, my rants are, they're not really negative, which is, I guess, positive. I'm a positive individual. Hope springs eternal. But anyway, Social Security taxes, ladies and gentlemen. The more I think about this and the older I get, the more perturbed, upset, fired up, flipped out, jacked up, that we have to pay taxes, or people, you all, many of you, some of you that are on Social Security now have activated that, have to pay taxes on that money. That's absolutely ridiculous to me. I mean, it was taxed money that got into the account to start with. And, you know, the more I thought about this, I knew that I didn't know the whole history of the Social Security. I mean, I knew it was started by FDR and all that kind of stuff. So I decided to go back and look at it a little bit. Because I really, it's void of any common sense that you're using a tax liability to pay and then taxing that. It's double taxation. But, you know, it's one of those things that a lot of Americans really don't know if you're not in this field of finance that you do pay taxes on your Social Security. It used to not be that way. And depending on how much income you make, there's a percentage of your Social Security that's subject to tax. And I'll chat about that. But let me go back and look at some of the history. I found this to be very interesting. Of course, I love history to start with because I often tell my kids, you know, if you study history, hopefully you won't repeat some of the mistakes that were made. You know, experience isn't the best teacher, in my opinion. Somebody else's experience is the best teacher. But anyway, where did Social Security originally come from? And I found this to be interesting. Most people knew it was part of the New Deal back during Franklin Delano Roosevelt's term back in the 30s. You know, he had four terms. He was our World War II president for us. And then Truman, of course, when he passed away, took over. There are rumors that actually Eleanor Roosevelt ran the White House the last year of his time in office, which is kind of interesting, or I shouldn't say last year, the last bit before his demise. But anyway, in 1934, FDR created a committee on economic security. That's what it was originally called, the Committee on Economic Security. And this committee was assigned the task of studying economic systems and kind of trying to provide a safety net, if you will, for the elderly and the disabled. See, prior to that, we didn't have anything. It was generally families that took care of people at that point. Well, in 1935, the Committee on Economic Security came back with a report and a plan, in fact, and they outlined a plan for a national program of economic security. That's what it was originally called. And that plan ultimately became the Social Security Act and was passed in 1935. Now, what's interesting about this is the Social Security Board was established and charged with implementing a system to enroll employees to report earnings and to collect payroll tax contributions. Now, back then, of course, the Social Security benefits were not taxed. They were part of a tax, but when the benefits came out, which started, I believe, in 1942, was the first check. Yeah, in fact, the The lady just died. I remember recently hearing this on the news, the lady who received the first Social Security check. But she paid $22.54 in, which was quite a bit of money back in the late 30s, but ended up receiving about $22,000 in benefits over her lifetime. So basically, it worked out well for her. Now, you don't see, I guess, too many of us that feel it works out well for, which is why there's always been talk of potentially privatizing it, but that gets into a whole political quagmire. So anyway, you know, when did the tax start? Which is really my gripe, my beef, my picadillo, if you will, you know, be my pet peeve, if you will. And so let's look at some of the changes that took place. Well, in 1935, it was set up. The first check started going out in 1942. Apparently, the next major significant change was in 1939 when they modified the act to actually include spouses or minor children of retired worker. And it really became more of kind of a family program rather than an individual security or safety net at that point. So I guess it must have been, let me see, the payment of monthly benefits was accelerated to begin in 1940 rather than 1942. So actually it was 1940 is when the accelerated benefits kicked in. The benefits were being paid prior to that. The next significant change, though, came place. So it was set up and started in 35 and 39. They included spouses and minor children. In 1950, they added a cost of living adjustment, and that was added to the program. And what's interesting about that is I had a gentleman on my show when I used to have my radio show who was the Social Security representative for Pennsylvania, and he talked about the liquidity or the the security of the Social Security system. And based on the cost of living raises, which were added, they were added and then changed. There was some changes made. It was based on basket goods and market price, and et cetera, et cetera. But right now it is based on the COLI, supposedly. Now, of course, when you have a recessionary time like we've had the last 5 years, the COLI doesn't help you. At the same time, inflation, based predominantly on energy and fuel more than anything, is got to be in excess of 5% annually the last few years. But let me share a thought with you. Here's the thought that I wanted to share. When Congress implemented Social Security in 1930, was the program intended as a social welfare program to redistribute wealth to those that were unfortunate, etc.? Or was it intended to be an insurance program that workers paid into during their years and received benefits from during their retirement years? Now, this is one of the things most of us Americans and people that I know are good-hearted people. We certainly want safety nets for disabled and children and blind and, you know, different people, unfortunate, that have issues. But see, what's interesting is the Social Security program is always touted politically as this entitlement program that's really kind of a safety net for all, when in fact it was designed to be a safety net for workers, which I found and their families to be interesting, which I guess you could consider it to be also. You know, when President Roosevelt originally looked for some social insurance, he envisioned a plan in which workers would contribute to their own future economic security. And he really opposed the concept of entitlements and welfare, so I've read. Now, I've heard mixed emotions, or I should say I've read mixed stories on that, but I know that in the reading that I've done as it relates to this social program, Social Security, his intent was not to create a welfare program. It was intended to create a safety net for workers at that point. So the original Social Security administration embraced the idea of Social Security being an insurance program under which the groups or individuals were insured against unidentifiable risk like disability or outliving their income, etc. So workers paid for this insurance, and it was part of their deductions, etc. On the other hand, though, there's other people. There's two schools of thought here. Is really Social Security an insurance program, or is it more of an entitlement program? Because if Social Security is to be, the benefits are based on social entitlements, then most kinds of taxes, income, property, sales tax, are paid without the exception on the part of the payer who's receiving commensurate benefits. So currently, Social Security benefits are calculated based upon the income earned by an individual, and then it's capped. So right now, it really is continually set up as an insurance program. And what's interesting to me, and this is really my beef, ladies and gentlemen, is insurance benefits aren't taxable. They're not income taxable. But yet, Social Security benefits are taxable, and they're supposed to be an insurance program. This is what bothers me about the whole, the way that it's set up and the slant that it's starting to take. You see, any proposed change must weigh whether Social Security is either an insurance program or a tax for redistribution of income program. One current proposal, for example, is the use of a means test to determine who should receive Social Security benefits, would solidify the program as a tax intended to redistribute income. Now, most Americans don't want that. I mean, you know, this whole, and I'm not going to get into that. It's more of a political thing, redistribution of income. But I do know that this program was set up as an insurance program. It should continue to be run as an insurance program, not just a program that anybody can tap into. And as a result of more and more people tapping into it or the government tapping into it to pay for other programs, the benefits received by retirees were not originally to be taxed as income in the year that they were received. But beginning in 1984, during the Reagan era, as they were trimming things up to repair the system because of its projected insolvency, they decided to start taxing Social Security benefits. So if you're individual and make over, I think it's $32,000 a year, 50% of your money subject to tax. If it's $44,000 as a couple, then it's 85. So it's $32,000 as a couple. It's 50% of your Social Security is subject to income tax. And I'm looking at the scale right now. Yes, married filing jointly as a couple, $44,000. So if your taxable income, your income, is over $44,000 as a couple, then 85% of your Social Security benefits are subject to tax. If it's under 32 as a couple, then 50% is subject to tax. If you make less than $32,000 a year, then there is no tax on your Social Security benefits. If you're single, it's $25,000 and then for 50 and 80 and $34,000 for 85%. So, you know, this really, it agitates me when insurance programs, you're taxed on the money, you pay the premium, you buy the insurance, the auto, home, health, long-term care, life, whatever it is. And then when those benefits come to you, they're not subject to tax. Why should it be the same way for a government insurance program? This is what really drives me crazy. And one thing we do not want to see, in my opinion, for the solvency of most Americans is anything but an insurance-type program, whether it be partly privatized or whatever. I'm tired of, you know, I'm almost 50 years old, and my whole life I've heard nothing but threats from political platforms, left, right, and in the middle, about Social Security. And the fact of the matter, ladies and gentlemen, is we have a $15 trillion national debt in this country, $15 trillion debt, okay? That does not include Medicaid and Social Security, because they are unfunded liabilities. You add Medicaid and Social Security, and it's closer to $65 trillion. Did I say $15 trillion or billion earlier? $15 trillion is what most people see as our national debt. But when you look at unfunded liabilities, Medicare and Social Security, we're talking about a huge number. We're talking about $65 trillion. Ladies and gentlemen, that's basically over $700,000 per American. That means every American would have to come up with $700,000 to flip in a bucket in order to pay our national debt. It's absolutely ridiculous. We need to start having more fiscal responsibility, and we won't all be subject to this type of stuff, because most of the people that are complaining about the taxes are some of the people that are receiving the benefits. You know, it's interesting. 70% of the taxes are paid in this country by the top 10% income earners. And 50% of the people in this country don't pay any income tax, and rightly they shouldn't if they're in a lower tax bracket. I understand that. But ladies and gentlemen, if the government's out there offering free passes, or anyone else was offering free tickets to shows or free tickets to anything, you would take advantage of that. Who wouldn't? I mean, if you didn't have to pay for it, who wouldn't want their hand up if more benefits were offered for free? But what's happening as a result of that in these programs not really being run and pursued the way they were originally intended, it gets politically skewed, then what we have is an issue that continues to come up. It really is something that unfortunately scares the group of people that in fact it should be helping. And this is a sad state about the whole deal. But Anyway, that's my rant on Social Security. I hope this finds you well. You've been listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast designed to pull back the curtain on the industry and expose the truth about money and investing. My name's Paul Nichols. I happen to be the host as well as the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisory firm located in Happy Valley. That is in State College, Pennsylvania, Happy Valley. And I appreciate your time. I hope this has enriched your life in some way. If nothing else, you're a little smarter about how Social Security works. And we'll be looking forward to chatting with you in our next podcast, which is coaching. I'm going to talk about the difference between effective and marginal tax rates. Effective and marginal tax rates. Most people don't know there's a difference. It's important to understand as it relates to being a good financial steward. Paul Nichols, your host, signing off. Have a wonderful day.